Hey, it's Samantha Scafidi, and I play Victoria Hayes in the Terrifier franchise, and you are listening to 30 Screams or Less.
Warning, 30 Screams or Less may contain spoilers about movies that have recently been released. If you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, come back, and enjoy the show. Or, if you don't want to waste your time watching the movie and rather have two random horror dudes watch it for you, we got you covered as well. Welcome, everyone, to 30 Screams or Less, a horror movie podcast where we review horror movies in 30 minutes or less. Today, we have something a little different for you. We have Jordan Cook from True Crime Collective. We're going to have an awesome conversation with him. He's going to tell us all about what he's got going on with True Crime Collective. But first, Corey, true horror story. Looked in the mirror this morning, my beard, an absolute nightmare. Dry, wild, looked like it clawed its way out of a crypt.
That's terrifying, man. Did you hit it with that beard octane?
Oh, yeah. Beard wash, conditioner, beard oil brought it back from the dead.
Fellas, don't let your beard turn into a creature feature. Keep it alive and kicking with Beard Octane.
And right now, hit beardoctane.com. Use code 30screams10. Get 10% off. Save some cash and save your beard from becoming a horror show.
Bad beard day? We've had plenty. Beard Octane's the fix. We swear by it.
Jordan, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you today?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me. I've been really excited to do this, to be on your podcast. Doing well, just living life down here in Florida, getting ready for the holidays, you know?
Hell yeah, man. It's definitely a good time of the year, especially for someone who owns a true crime shop. Like, you got to think. Actually, I like to start off with Corey asking the questions, but I'm going to ask this one real quick. I mean, because it is the holidays, right?
Hit me with it.
Do you think people are actually buying gifts, like true crime gifts, and just giving them to like their kids or their family members and things like Christmas?
Absolutely, man. I actually just had somebody bought a John Wayne Gacy painting off of us for her son.
A few
weeks ago. Yeah, so she's it's actually this one right behind me here. I know the people that are just listening can't see, but this old Mickey Mouse guy right here.
Yeah.
So I put that up for sale on the website and got an email from this lady, and apparently her son is like actually like a big customer of ours, like buys like shirts and that type of stuff from us all the time. And she was like, "Hey, I want to buy that painting for my son, but like I need to do like a payment plan type thing because I can't just, you know, these things are expensive." So we offer payment plans when we can. And she was like, "Can you just like give me an invoice? Like, I'll take a picture, print it out, and give that to him. And then once it's paid off in a few months, you know, he'll get the physical painting." So, to answer your question, yes, there's a lot of people. Because, I mean, everybody's got somebody in their life that loves true crime. I mean, it depends on to what extent they love true crime. Exactly. You know, it might just be they like the documentaries, or it could be they want a painting from John Wayne Gacy hanging in their house. So, we just had this big deal with all this Eileen Wuornos stuff, and that story kind of blew up unexpectedly. So we had a big influx of sales and, you know, people coming to the website and ordering stuff. But given that it's the holidays now, like that's all kind of started to die down, but we still were having a ton of holiday orders. And, you know, we have people that are like, "This is a gift. Please black out the, you know, the name of the business on the shipping label," that type of thing. So yeah, this is always a busy year for us, busy time of the year for us. But at the end of the day, it's retail. You know what I mean? A lot of the stuff we sell is merchandise, t-shirts, bags, stickers, pins, that type of stuff. So yeah, but we have had a lot of people that are, you know, like, "Yeah, I'm ordering this murderabilia box for my wife or my husband."
Yeah, I've seen the murderabilia boxes that, like, we did the unboxing of one of them,
right?
And I thought that was so cool because I'm a fan of culty shit. I say this all the time on the podcast. Like, I just love culty shit because it's really fucking weird and it just blows my mind that people can go down that path. You know what? Actually, in anticipation of this episode, I decided to watch Monster last night with Charlize Theron and Christina Ricci. Because that's like great movie. It's about the Eileen Wuornos. So
yeah,
I'm definitely going to want to talk a little bit about like this collection. of Eileen Wuornos stuff, but I'm not going to hijack this interview. I'm going to let Corey ask the first question. Well, second question now, because you always get to ask the first question.
So actually, I have to make a comment first, because you were talking about that painting you sold to someone for Christmas.
Yeah.
I wonder if you just spoiled one of my Christmas gifts, because that's on my Christmas list for my mom.
I promise you it wasn't you. I recognize the last name, and I've talked to the son before.
Okay.
And it's definitely not you.
Okay. But I did put I put something on my Christmas list from your website. Actually, my mom still buys me shit. So I put a link. I think it might have been a Murderabilia box, but
okay,
that's
cool.
Funny.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Corey. Santa's not bringing you a John Wayne Gacy painting this year.
I will have one of those for this office one day, I promise.
I will dress up as Pogo the Clown with a Santa hat on and hand deliver it to you for Christmas if you do.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing. You can come to New Hampshire. Don't forget your winter jacket.
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, God. I would love to see this. That would make prime social media content right there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Think of that commercial. That would be like a commercial. Like, just you're just going up for the holidays, you know, and you've got your fucking John Wayne Gacy painting or some shit. Just, oh, God. Fucking hilarious.
I love the idea. It's a great idea. I make Christmas sweaters every year or two, and I've always wanted to do a Christmas sweater, like, that's just Pogo the Clown, but he's dressed as Santa instead.
Oh,
and I haven't done it. I probably just gave somebody the idea somebody's going to take it, but maybe next year.
That happens to us all the time.
Oh, get yourself on LegalZoom or something and copyright that shit quick.
We always manifest shit on here. We have a joke. We say something and then it happens.
Well, you heard it first here on 30 Screams or Less from Jordan Cook of True Crime Collective. So,
yep.
send a check to him when that happens.
Right, right. December 18th, 2025, motherfucker.
Corey, go ahead with your first question.
All right. So you're a business owner, but as a true crime fan yourself, how do you decide what to keep for your own personal collection?
That's a good question, man. I've never been asked that. So first and foremost, my, like, for lack of better words, my bread and butter when it comes to being like a collector is the John Wayne Gacy stuff, primarily the artwork. Right now, me and my wife own, I want to say 32 or 33 John Wayne Gacy paintings. So that's like, that's always like when one pops up and it's like one that I don't have, or, you know, one that, cause he did multiples of a lot of them. Right. But,
right.
Or just one that I like, you know, in general, I like, that's like, I'm like, oh, yep. Gotta get it. You know? But there's a lot of other stuff too that I'm interested in as well. More recently I've started amping up my collection of Ted Bundy items. If you look behind me here, I know the glare's kind of, you know, obstructing it, but this was a 3-page letter that he wrote while he was actually on trial for murder in Colorado. And then below it is actually his original mugshot photo from his first arrest in Salt Lake City.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we've added some really cool Ted Bundy stuff to the collection as of lately too, but honestly, man, it's never really super specific. I like to stick to the bigger names, you know, Bundy, Gacy, Dahmer, Eileen, Charles Manson. But if there's like an item that stands out, especially if it's more like one of a kind, you know, because it's like anybody can get, you know, like a lot of these people wrote hundreds of letters while they were in prison. So it's like a letter is not, is, you know, it's pretty common. It's pretty easy to get. But like a one-of-a-kind item, like his original mugshot photo or the sneakers that Eileen was arrested in, those are the items to me that like stand out. Stuff that looks like it would be in a museum.
Yeah.
So that and artwork. I really like artwork because artwork's more interesting than, you know, reading a letter. So we have quite a bit of serial killer artwork. I don't know if you had seen, but we just posted a video. We have like a stack of Tommy Lynn Sells artwork. One of them's right here behind me, that little tree right there. But yeah, so
you know what,
I was a big fan too, man. I got that, I bought another box from you a couple weeks ago, and you sent me that Haddon Clark Garfield,
yes,
with his fucking hair. I was like this is probably the coolest thing, but I saw that artwork and I was like, this is really cool because this was in possession of, you know, a real person.
Right
drew
exactly
this.
And it was created, it wasn't just written, you know, it wasn't just a letter that he wrote or, you know, something that he autographed or something like that. It was actually something that he created, whether he traced that Garfield out or just used as a, you know, a reference and drew it himself. But that was like a creation by him, you know, just like Charles Manson made the little string art. I don't know if you've ever seen those. He made like the spiders, the scorpions, the little dolls. That's like handmade. Like he used his hair and thread from his clothing to make those. You know what I'm saying? So like that's like something that he put time and creativity into. So to me, those items are a lot, they're a lot more interesting to me than just like a letter or an autograph or a poem or something of that magnitude.
Right.
Well, but that was a good question, man. Yeah, I've never been asked that. So
yeah, you're welcome.
Well, here's the crazy thing about those Eileen Wuornos shoes is that, yes, okay, she was wearing them when she got arrested. So she was probably wearing those shoes when she was doing her murders as well. So
I believe so. I tend to believe so because at the end of the day, Eileen was more or less living on the streets. I mean, she was just kind of drifting and hopping around. She wasn't necessarily homeless, but she also didn't have a closet full of 30 different pairs of sneakers or high heels or anything like that, right? So it is safe to say that more than likely, yes, there was at least one murder committed, you know, while she was wearing those shoes. Is it confirmed? No, unfortunately, it's not. So, you know, I couldn't exactly advertise that, but I think it's safe to say that the likelihood of it is pretty high for sure. But I mean, just the fact that, you know, she was wearing those when she was arrested, right? And that happened out in front of the Last Resort Bar in Port Orange, Florida. It's like a couple hours from where I live. And that is all on video, right? That whole arrest. I don't know if you've ever seen the surveillance video of that, but they had somebody posted up across the street surveilling. And, you know, that's all on video. That was like a very iconic arrest of, you know, one of the most infamous serial killers of our time. So the fact that that's what she was wearing when she was brought in alone is super significant.
One of a kind.
Yeah, and she even wore those. She wore those too. She had those on when she went to her first preliminary hearing. And then she was allowed to keep those because there was a letter that she wrote to Dawn when she, you know, eventually boxed those up and sent them off to her because she autographed both of them. She autographed both shoes and she wrote, "Shoes busted in 1991. Right? And dated the day that she got busted. So she was actually still had those while she was locked up for a while. So those shoes got some usage out of her for sure.
Yeah.
And you had the flip-flops she wore to be executed.
Well, we did. So those sold because a lot of the stuff we got, we sold, right? So those, the flip-flops, they were part of the big sale. We, I don't know if I told you guys about it or if you'd seen anything on social media, but we did a really big deal for a lot of that stuff with the museum. So those flip-flops and a number of the other Eileen items went to that museum.
Yeah.
So
I did see that video, and you said it was a well-known museum, but you kind of couldn't talk about who it was yet.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was kind of like a surprise. While we were sitting, because we drove over to Orlando to hand deliver it, you know, they cut us a check and they went over all the paperwork that we had for those items to make sure everything checked out, right? Of course, doing their due diligence, their museum after all. But that was like one of the things where it was like, I asked them, right? Like I asked them like, you know, hey, you know, is it cool if I, you know, once you guys have it in your museum, if I kind of like announce? And they were like, no, we don't like giving up the sources or anything like that of where we get stuff. And I was kind of like, I was a little bit mad at myself for even asking because I was like, it wasn't in the contract, right? The contract for this stuff was very cut and dry. Like, you're selling this to us for this amount, right? And that was pretty much it. And then they ended up saying, well, actually, you know, so I'm just trying to respect their wishes because, you know, it's an entity that we wish to do business with again, and we don't want to do anything to jeopardize that relationship. So for now, but I mean, it's only a matter of time. Once those are out on display, people are going to be posting about it. There's going to be videos that go viral, you know, just like other videos from their museum about other items they have there. And somebody's going to see it and then they're going to put two and two together and be like, oh, we saw this on TMZ that this guy had it. And so they must have got it from him. So at the end of the day, it's not going to be a super hard to connect the dots there.
I have a feeling I know what museum. Maybe I'm wrong. Nope, I'm wrong. Okay. No, I was thinking it was Museum of Death, but that's in like Louisiana, and there's one.
So the museum,
not Hollywood.
I will say the museum's not in Florida. They just have an office here because one of their owners lives in Florida. So they have an office. It's not their museum office. They have another business, and she just, you know, kind of works out of there. But it was one of the owners that we met with, and they have a little hub in Orlando. So
Got
the
it.
Museum isn't actually in Florida, but I will say it was not Museum of Death.
Okay. All right.
Where does Zach Baggins live? No, I'm just kidding.
he actually reached out trying to buy the items.
Really?
Yeah.
I figured he'd be one of the first.
He was. He reached out before because, like, TMZ picked up the story, right? And they were, like, kind of hyping up, like, they're going to be going up for auction later this week, right? And once that story kind of blew up, yeah, he messaged us, I want to say, the same day that story came out. We had an email from him. And then he was, like, real adamant right off rip. And was like, you know, here's my number, text me, let's talk. And we texted back and forth for a little bit, but we didn't end up coming to an agreement.
Your business is definitely a unique one. And as we know, there's definitely a market for it. Cue Corey getting the Murderabilia box, for instance. What compelled you to open such a niche business, such as selling items from prolific serial killers?
So True Crime Collective did not start out as a Murderabilia business. When I started True Crime Collective, I was working as a screen printer and I wanted to start a clothing line. Like, ever since I started screen printing, I was like, you know, I have all the tools at my fingertips here. Like, you know, like I wanted to start something, and I was going back and forth about what I wanted the theme of it to be, because it was kind of at that time where a lot of, like, clothing brands and such were like, there was, like, a lot of oversaturation with it. It was like everybody was doing something. And it was like, I ride motorcycles. So my first thought was like, oh, I want to do something motor culture related, right? But then I was like, well, there's 3,000 companies that already do that shit. You know what I mean? And, you know, I had a couple other ideas here and there, but I just kept coming back to something where I was like, I don't want to do something that anyone else is doing. I want to do something that, like, nobody fucking does. Even if it's niche, even if it's not going to appeal to a larger audience, like, I want to do something that hasn't been done, or, you know, hasn't been done to that level, and something that I'm also passionate about, of course. Like, that was the whole thing behind it. Like, I wasn't going to, you know, go make shirts about anime when I don't fucking watch anime. You know, right. I wanted to do something that meant something to me. So I started thinking of, like, true crime and horror related stuff. But again, horror, there's so many companies out there that make horror shirts. And then you got to go through, like, the licensing and all that stuff if you want to use those, you know, different movies and shows and stuff. So I landed on true crime. And it was funny because I was actually just thinking about this today, because when I first started this, like, just quick rewind, and you can cut this out if I ramble, but I was living in Philly at the time. I had just started working as a screen printer, like, 6 months before that. Ended up getting evicted from the house that I was living in and had to move back home to Erie, 6 hours away, because I was fucking broke. I acquired a ton of debt while I was living in Philly because it was so expensive. And, you know, I got evicted. I had nowhere to go. I had no fucking money. And luckily, I have extremely wonderful parents. And I called my mom now. Like, Mom, I'm in a fucking bind. Like, what should I do? She was like, rent a U-Haul. I'll drive down there. We'll get your stuff back up here. You can come back, live here for a little bit, figure it out, you know, go from there. So I got a job back there, screen printing. And then that was around the time that I was, you know, trying to do something. So I literally had like $100 to my name at the time, but I knew I, like, wanted to do something. I'm like, I'm going to get a couple designs. My buddy that was a tattoo artist, I traded him printing some of his shirts for his shop in exchange for designs. And he came up with a couple, like, really solid ones right off rip. And I printed those. And luckily I could do it all at cost because I worked in a screen printing shop. And I just kind of, you know, it just went from there, you know, and it just grew, and it grew very slowly. It wasn't anything that took off overnight, but it just, you know, it grew very slowly. And then I eventually got into collecting Murderabilia myself, because through the brand, I had guys that collect Murderabilia and guys that used to visit Charles Manson and John Wayne Gacy and, you know, characters of that sort that were buying my shirts. And, you know, just striking up a conversation via email or Instagram. And then, you know, they're showing me all this, you know, stuff that they have. And I'm like, holy fuck, I want to own some of this shit. This is amazing. So that's what really got me into the Murderabilia side of it, was meeting those individuals and finding out just exactly what was out there. And then once I started collecting, I wasn't even selling any of it. I was just collecting what I could at the time with what little money I had. And then there was a couple things, like big deals that came through where somebody reached out, and they were like, there was one where some guy, his dad died, and his dad used to correspond with Gacy. He was like, I've got like 15, 20 Gacy paintings that my dad died, and I don't want them, you know, make me a fair offer and they're yours. And, you know, I did, and got them, and then started selling them. And that was kind of like my push into the Murderabilia business. And then, you know, slowly over time, just started selling more and more and more. But I would say, you know, as of the last like 2-3 years is when business has ramped up quite a bit for True Crime Collective in that sense. Ever since, and you know, me and my wife met a few years ago, and then after we got married, she started getting more hands-on with the brand and bringing in ideas too. And a lot of her ideas and the stuff that she brought to the table was phenomenal and stuff that really helped us grow quite a bit over the last couple of years. So super grateful for her and everything that she's brought to the table with that. And yeah, it's just, it's one of those things, man. It's like an up and down business, and we've just kind of paved our way into this. There was only a couple other Murderabilia dealers to begin with, but you know, I think we've probably earned that number one slot as far as like, you know, the biggest dealer, you know, which is crazy to think, because some of, you know, a couple of these guys have been around for decades. But yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, gloat or toot my own horn here, because I like to be humble, but, you know, I can see what type of numbers they're doing and what type of numbers we're doing. And it seems like we have a bigger reach as of right now anyway, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, great. But, you know, we're friends with a lot of the other Murderabilia dealers too. So, you know, we all like to help each other out. So it's a pretty cool little community.
That's pretty awesome. There's obviously like a lot of room in that space because it's so niche. I mean, obviously, like you said, there's like a few companies that are doing it. So you pretty much have the whole market cornered between you and the few other companies that are doing it. But as I always say, anyone can start a business. It doesn't have to be like, you know, true crime stuff. But
yeah,
there's always going to be someone that prefers that business. There's always going to be room. It's just you have to stand out as much as possible. And
right.
I think what
right.
you're doing allows you to stand out because it's something that people go, okay, I know I can go to these particular companies. Because it's, you're not going to go to Walmart or Target and get this shit. You know, you have to go to a specialist, and you're a specialist.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's pretty fucking wild that you actually come across this stuff. And I'm going to have questions about that. But, Corey, I'll let you take the next question.
No, it was actually just a statement first. Like, I had originally heard about what you do from the Oddly and Warnos stuff. It popped up on, I think, TikTok. I've always been fascinated with the true crime stuff, but I never knew that there was, you could own pieces of that, you know? And then the second I saw you on TikTok, I went to your fucking website and I placed an order. I was like, this is incredible. I can own pieces of history. So, and now I'm addicted, and my wife hates me for it. Every time a new piece comes, she's like, you're bringing that bad juju into the house, she said. But I don't know. It makes me happy. I like looking at it, you know?
It is a very addicting hobby. That's like, I understand what you're saying, because that was how, like, when I got my first thing, and it was like, got to get the next one. You know what I mean? And then it gets to the point where you're just like, you want to grow. Like, you want to get, like, cool, I got a couple letters. Now I want a painting. You know, now I want an mm-hmm. original fingerprint chart or a mugshot or something like that, or something that, you know, they wore. And it does become a very addicting hobby. And unfortunately, it's a very expensive hobby.
Sure.
Because, you know, like I said, we sell this stuff, but we also collect it, and it's not cheap for us either. You know, it's like,
right,
we
have
people that are like, always like, your stuff's so expensive. And I'm like, listen, like, we paid a lot to get this. Like, we didn't just buy this for $5 and list it for $10,000. You know what I mean? Like, we paid a lot just to obtain this, you know? And we try to be extremely fair when it comes to like our pricing. Like, we try to, you know, reflect like current market value, you know. And it's like, I reference, you know, and I'll ask, like, you know, a couple of the other dealers that I'm buddies with, like I'll ask them, like, if it's something that I've never really had a lot of experience with, like something new, like, you know, that's never really come across my lap, which is rare these days, but like, I'll ask them, like, hey man, like, you ever sell one of these? It's like, okay, well, you know, what'd you sell it for? And they're like, $500. Okay, cool. That gives me a basis of, you know, where to go, what the current market value for that specific item looks like, you know? And now I have a lot of people that, you know, come to me now too and ask me like, hey, you know what, you know, if I sell this privately, what should I be asking for it? And I'm like, this is what I would ask for it, you know? Or I'll try to buy it from them myself and just be like, well, I'll give you this much, you know, and I'll just, you know, I'll buy it from you right now. But it's with this brand, we, like, since we got into Murderbilia, we've always tried to be fair and honest, right? Like, we've always, like, there's another Murderbilia site out there, and a lot of people will know who I'm talking about. If you go to their website, you'll know who I'm talking about because their prices are fucking insane. Like, they don't make any sense. They're asking $85,000 for a John Wayne Gacy painting.
Wow.
That's been listed on the site for 10 fucking years. Nobody's going to buy it. Either take it down or lower the price. You know what I mean? But like, all their prices on their site are like that. They're just unrealistic. And we have people that come to us all the time and, you know, they're just like, holy shit. Like, we knew about this guy because he's been around for 30 fucking years, but, you know, we've been spending this much with them and you guys are selling it for much cheaper. So, you know, we want people to be able to get this stuff. We understand, like I said, it's not cheap for us to get. So we have to make money off of it too, but we want everybody to be able to get this. We don't want it to just be like, only wealthy people can get this shit. Only people that have, you know, deep pockets can afford this shit. That's not what we're out to do. And that's why we offer like payment plans, because for bigger items, it's a lot easier to be able to pay $500 a month over a year than it is to, you know, pay $5,000-$6,000 up front. So we try to make it as attainable as possible and work with people as much as we can. And then just, you know, building a relationship with our buyers too, like regulars, like, you know, you, like yourself, like, you know what I mean? Like, people message us asking questions, wanting to know this, wanting to know that. Like, we try to build a bond and a relationship with these people, because at the end of the day, you guys have bought from us, other people that have bought from us. At the end of the day, y'all are the reason that we're successful, because you're buying from us. So the least I can do is take 2 minutes out of my day to have a conversation with you. You know what I mean? So we've always just tried to, you know, maintain, you know, that, and just, you know, being as honest and as humble as possible when it comes to all this stuff. And that has really helped quite a bit, because there are other dealers that are out there and other dealers that have kind of come and gone that people just have nothing nice to say about, because they screwed them over, they stole from them, or, you know what I mean? They sold them a fake or something like that. And it's just like, we're not out to do any of that.
That's good. I can see that being like something that's really like, you want to be careful about paying for, because there are some people out there who I bet have just been like, oh yeah, this is from Jeffrey Dahmer. Right. Mm-hmm. And they can fucking make some bullshit certificate up, and people will just think, oh, okay, well, this is like an official thing. And, you know, $5,000 later, they're out of it, and, you know, the company splits, and then they realize, oh, it's not authentic. It's not even his real signature, some bullshit like that. I mean, we've seen it plenty of times before, even with
all
like
the time.
Sports memorabilia, like all that shit.
Yeah.
It's
unfortunate, but it is.
Thing.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but just like you said, just with sports memorabilia, when somebody realizes like, oh, I can make some money off of this, and all I got to do is just, you know, forge some handwriting, like, it sucks, but there is an abundance of fake shit out on the market. For somebody like myself that's extremely experienced in this and has had, you know, thousands of these pieces, you know, fall into my lap over the years, it's easy for me to spot a real from a fake, because, you know, I just had this conversation on that other interview we did, but like, most of the fakes are really not good. But for somebody that's never owned or actually like seen a real one, it's hard to tell, you know? For somebody like me, it's easy to tell, but, you know, if you've never owned something from Ted Bundy, like, I could put this up and be like, do you think this was signed by Ted Bundy? And you might be like, yeah, looks good to me, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of like bullshit certificates of authenticity out there that somebody just typed up like a real basic thing on a computer and put it on there. And it sucks, because we have to break the news to people all the time that they got sold a fake years ago. You know what I mean? All the time, because we have people reach out and they're like, hey, I bought this years ago. Do you think you could, you know, could you take a look at it, authenticate it? Or they're trying to sell it. Like, they're like, hey, we bought this, but we're ready to move on from it. And it's like, these people aren't trying to sell me a fake knowingly, but they believe it's real. And then they hit me up and they show me and I'm like, dude, I really fucking hate to be the one that has to tell you this, but that's a forgery. And of course, you know, they deny it. They're like, no, it's real. Like, it's not the certificate. And I'm like, brother, trust me, like, I'm not here to, like, I really don't want to tell you this. Like, I would love to tell you, yeah, man, that's legit. It's worth this much money. We'll pay you right now for it. I wish that that was the fucking circumstance, but unfortunately it's not. And it sucks too, because a lot of times those people get that bad news, but then they go try to sell it elsewhere anyway. And it's just like this cycle of fucking abuse where it's just like, like, you're just passing it along. You know, and it's like, yeah, I understand you got fucked over and you want to get your money back, but now you're just fucking that next person over. So it sucked, but yeah, there's unfortunately there are quite a few fakes out there. But like I said, most of the ones that are out there, they're pretty easy to spot. And, you know, things like letters, it's really hard to fake a letter, especially if it's got the mailing envelope with it, because it's stamped by the prison, it's dated, you know, all that. It's kind of self-authenticating, but you know, and going back, kind of, I just realized I forgot to touch on this, but the sports memorabilia stuff. So there's two entities that authenticate like those types of things, right? JSA, PSA. I'm sure you guys have heard of those before, right?
Oh yeah.
So for some fucking reason, those two, they try to delve into serial killer items. I cannot tell you how many fake fucking serial killer items I have come across that have JSA and PSA COAs attached to them. It drives me absolutely out of my fucking mind.
That's not
good. And people ask me all the time too. They're like, they'll want to buy an item and they're like, well, is it JSA certified? And I'm like, no, it's certified by me. It's certified by us, by True Crime Collective. And they're like, well, it's got to be JSA or PSA, otherwise we're not touching it. I'm like, so you don't want a professional in true crime murderabilia to authenticate it. You want a professional in sports memorabilia to authenticate a serial killer item. Is that what I'm getting? Is that what you're telling me? It doesn't make sense. I'm like, think about what you're saying. You know what I mean? And I get it, because those are two entities that are super popular, right? They have a huge reputation. They have a very good reputation. But when it comes to true crime stuff, they have no reputation. Throw that shit out. I've literally gotten, and not to say that all of the ones are fake, I've gotten bought items from other people that were previously authenticated by JSA or PSA. I crumple it up and I throw the COA out. I'm like, I don't need this. This is worthless. In this world, that is worthless.
That's wild, because like those companies are, they can authenticate a Michael Jordan autograph, but they can't authenticate a Jeffrey Dahmer autograph. Like,
right.
I don't know, man. I actually didn't know that they dabbled in that until you just said that.
Unfortunately, they do.
I see a business opportunity here then. So you do the same exact thing. And you do the grading and everything like that, and it's just strictly true crime. Just
there you go. There's a new company for you to start.
Well, so like we offer an authentication service, right? So it's like, if like Corey, say for example, you had an original Gacy painting, and you hit me up and you're like, hey man, I have this painting. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if it's fake, but I want you to check it out. And if it is real, I want you to, you know, get a COA. It's like, okay. So we charge $100, which is fair, because I think JSA and PSA charge like $200, $250 to do the same thing. So we charge $100 and we'll take a look at it. We require you to send it to us so that we can look at it in person, A, to make sure that you actually have the item you're sending pictures of, and B, to make sure that, you know, it's not a copy, that it's live ink, whatever it might be. And then, you know, if it's, yeah, man, this is real, here's your COA. I send it back with your item. You pay me $100. There you go. You're done. If it's fake, well, unfortunately, man, this is fake. You know, I'm just going to, but a lot of times people will ask that, and then the item ends up being fake. Like, they'll send a picture of it and I'm like, dude, you don't got to send me anything and you don't got to pay me anything. I'm just going to tell you right now, it's not real. You know, save them $100.
If I ever own a John Wayne Gacy painting, which I will, it's coming from you. So I know it's real. I'm not worried.
Oh, yeah. So, and the thing about John Wayne Gacy's paintings, too, that, like, I'm sure you've heard of Grave Face Museum, right? So they're in Savannah, Georgia, right? The owner, Ryan, he's got, like, the largest collection of John Wayne Gacy artifacts in the fucking world. Like, makes my collection look, like, non-existent. But he owns, so Gacy kept a very specific log sheet of all his paintings. So if you look at the back of this painting, you know, in particular, he titles it, he signs it, and then there's a number, right? Or two numbers. Mm-hmm. And those numbers are all are all kept in a logbook. He kept them all in a logbook, right, to keep track of them. So every number that's on the back of these paintings is in that logbook, and it'll tell you, the logbook will say, you know, it was, this is the painting I did. It was Pogo the Clown. It was done on this date. It was done for this person, and it'll have the number. So Ryan owns that logbook, and we are friends with Ryan. So anytime, and not for nothing, I can spot a reel from a fake AC a mile away, but just to double down, we will send the number to Ryan to be like, hey man, does this match up in the logbook? Yep, you're good to go. Cool. That's all the authentication you need, because that master log is the end all be all when it comes to John Wayne Gacy's art. As long as those numbers match up and coincide in that logbook, it's real. If they don't match up, sorry, it's fake.
So the next thing I'd like to ask, are there any items you refuse to sell or display?
Man, that's a good question. I tend to stay away from the fucking Nazi shit.
I will say that there is
technically one Nazi item that we have up for sale on the site. It's a original Iron Cross pendant with, you know, the swastika, and I think it's 1939 in it, but it was Charles Manson's in prison. There's a picture of him wearing it in prison. So we're selling that as Charles Manson's necklace, not as, like, you know, a Nazi artifact. I would say that's probably like the main thing that we would stay away from. And not only that, but I mean, that kind of, like, it is technically murderabilia, but at the same time, that's more like war relics, and war relics have like their own little, you know, subgenre and dealers and people that deal in that. But we already get so much backlash from people and negative attention from people that don't like what we do in general. It's like, if we started selling Nazi shit, bro, it would, like, that'd be fucking it. Like, we wouldn't hear the end of it. You know what I mean? So, you know, and not only that, but just like the, you know, like serial killers, of course, you know, they committed a lot of atrocities, but, you know, Nazis and that type of shit, like, that's atrocity on like a whole nother fucking plane. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we tend to stay away from it for multiple reasons. But other than that, I think that's really the only thing that we would steer away from, other than like maybe something that was like came from a victim. You know, we don't want to sell, like, we don't like selling stuff that's like victim stuff. I don't even know, because it's not anything that's like ever come up or we've ever been offered. But if somebody was like, yeah, like, this was the shirt that fucking Gabby Petito was strangled to death, then I wouldn't touch it. I'd, like, oh, no, yeah. I'm good, man. You know, like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd say anything like those, that's what we would stay away from for sure.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little easier to justify making, like, money off of the serial killer stuff as opposed to, like, the victim stuff. Like, the victim stuff, just, like, they had to go through that hell, whereas the serial killers were, like, they were only thinking about themselves in that moment and doing their task and, like, their self-gratification, all that stuff. Yeah, and so it's a lot easy of people, to be like, you know, like, what? You know, I'm going to just, I'll make money off of you, and they're just probably like, oh, whatever, I don't fucking care. I got my rocks
off. It's one thing to make money off of, like, this dead piece of shit that, you know what I mean, that committed all these fucking horrible crimes. But it's another thing to then go and try to make money off of somebody that suffered at the hands of that fucking person. You know, that to me, that doesn't sit right. And a lot of people, like, tend to think, like, they're like, they tell us, they're like, oh, you guys are disgusting, like, you have no sympathy for the victims or anything. It's like, yeah, we actually fucking do. Like, we are human beings. Like, I'm not just some, like, heartless piece of shit that's over here laughing that all these people got killed by John Wayne Gacy or anything like that. And you know, for example, like, we did that interview with Brianna Whitney, and she posted a couple of the reels and, you know, talking to us about this. And she posted one of them on her TikTok. And I guess it got taken down because I didn't see it, but my wife saw it. I guess Gabby Petito's dad actually commented on the video, and he said, this is why we had Gabby's van crushed, right? And I'm like, fair point. You know what I mean? Like, nothing but respect to the guy, you know, like, fair point. But also, before you judge us too hard, we drove over an hour out of our way when we were in Wyoming, hiked 2 miles out into the middle of fucking nowhere to find the spot that she was murdered, to put fucking pay our respects and put flowers on her fucking memorial. Right.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? So it's like, people want to, like, say the word, you know, these pieces of shit that just glorify monsters. And it's like, we're not, we're human beings. We're good human beings. You know, what we do, I understand it's not super accepted in a lot of realms of society, and that's fine. But at the same time, to say that we're, you know, heartless or that we glorify the killers and we have no sympathy for the victims, it's just straight up not true. You know what I mean? We wouldn't have done that if we didn't care. Like, we wouldn't have gone out of our way to go out there and find her memorial, you know, like trekking across rocks and streams, getting our shoes wet, falling in the rocks. You know what I mean? Like, we wouldn't have gone through that trouble if we didn't care. So.
Oh, absolutely makes sense. I agree. I commend that you're trying to make money off the monsters as opposed to the victims. Yeah. If you were making money off of the victims, you wouldn't be on this podcast. I'd be like, yeah, forget it.
Rightfully, not dealing rightfully with this. So. Rightfully yeah. So. Yep.
So, yeah, I got a question, actually. So,
let's hear it.
When you're obtaining these items, are you reaching out directly to the individuals who acquired these items? Or is there some sort of serial killer swap meet that I don't know about?
It's kind of all over the place. Like, I tell my wife all the time, like, there's so many moving parts to this business. Like, there's just like I'll be doing a deal with this person and then this person. And this, it's like, I'll be telling my wife, because like, I'm the one that mainly communicates when people, you know, hit us up, like via email or on her Instagram. Like, I'm usually the one that's responding. Like, she has access to all that. So she sees the messages, but I'm usually the one that's like seeing it first and responding. And I'm just like, right. There's always so much going on that like, I'm telling her like, oh yeah, you know, just got this stuff from, she's like, what? What's that? You know,
yeah.
Or
yeah.
Something will come in the mail and what's this? And I'm like, oh, that's the, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer stuff from so-and-so. And she's like, what Jeffrey Dahmer stuff? It's like, I told you about this. There's just so much going on that it's hard to keep track of it all. Right. So it's very time consuming because I work like, this is not my full time, right? I work really? A full time job. Well, it is full time. I put as many hours into this as I do my full time job, but I work a 9-to-5. I'm a blue collar guy. Right. So I'm like always doing something with the brand, like messaging somebody back, trying to secure items, listing new stuff on the site, you know, packing shipping orders. Like, we are always doing something with this. And it's very time consuming and it's very tiring, but we put the fucking work in and we put the hard work in and, you know, it's paying off, which is great. But with that being said, kind of getting back to your original question, with where we get the items, it's very all over the place because a lot of times we do get items directly from people that corresponded with these people. For example, I sent you the murderabilia box, and I think you would ask me like, who is the lady that, you know, the letters were addressed to, right? So her, for example, she reached out to us. She found our site. She sent us an email and said, hey, I corresponded with dozens of different criminals, serial killers, murderers for, you know, 2-3 decades. And I have all the letters and I'm looking to sell them. I'm moving. I'm looking to just get rid of it all. X amount buys it all if you want it. I was like, cool. It was one of those offers. It was like a super good fucking deal. And that was how the mystery boxes came about. When we bought that collection out from that lady, she sent us two totes, like two big totes, just full of letters, bro. Like Ramirez, Manson, Dorothea Puente, Kendall Francois, Waldo Grant, Randy Kraft was in there, Joel Rifkin, Robin Gecht, Bill Suff, like all these guys, just like decades worth of correspondence. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's going to take us years to move any of this shit if we just list it all individually on the site. Like, there's so much stuff. So my wife was the one that she was like, well, what if we did like some type of like bot, like a mystery box type thing, you know, a murderabilia box where, you know, and that would make it more affordable, you know, for people to get it too. You know, somebody that's starting out collecting that is like, well, you know, I only have 50, 100 bucks to spend. Right. And it's like, I'm not really sure how I feel about the hobby just yet. I want to kind of dip my toes in the water here and see, that's a great way for them to get some awesome items for a really good fucking price. But then we also have an option that goes up to $500, right? So it's like, that's more for like either A, somebody that's just like, man, I got the money, fucking, I don't care what you send me, just send me something cool. Or, you know, somebody that's a serious collector that already has a lot of shit that's just like, yeah, I want to be surprised. You know, I want to do something different, spice it up a little bit. And so those mystery boxes have been a huge success. Huge fucking success. We sell more of those than we sell anything else on the site. T-shirts, pins, stickers, anything. Like, those things sell like hotcakes, and we've gotten so much good feedback from them. Like, if you go on the site now and you go down to the reviews, there's over 24 reviews on there now of like people just like ranting and raving about what they got and people messaging us saying that they're super stoked on what they got. So we're pumped about that, right? Because like we weren't sure how it was going to be. We were like, well, you know, some of these guys aren't as well known, you know, like somebody buying a 50, I hope that somebody buying a $50 box isn't expecting to get a $5,000 Jeffrey Dahmer letter, but you know, and I hope that when they don't get it, they're not super disappointed and they're like, oh, fuck this. I don't want this shit. But yeah, everybody seems to really be to loving them for the most part. So yeah, kudos to Marin, because that was her brainchild there. And it really has been a huge success. So, I'm sure there is going to be a day where, I mean, we still have a lot to go through, you know, random stuff. And, you know, we continue to pick up collections as we go too. And those, you know, get put in the mystery boxes as well. But like, once we get to like the end of that huge collection, I'm like, fuck, you know, until we pick up another one of that size and magnitude, we'll probably have to suspend the murder boxes for a little bit, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. We still have quite a bit of stuff to go through. Like I said, it's like 2 decades worth of correspondence with just dozens of people, man. It's pretty crazy. But you know, other than that, like we have people that'll reach out and just be like, hey, I've got this John Wayne Gacy painting, or hey, I've got this letter from Charles Manson, or you know, whoever it might be. And you know, just like offering they'd want to sell it. And I'm like, okay, how much do you want for it? And they put out a price. If I'm good with it, I'm sure we'll pay that. If it's a little bit more than what we were able to pay, you know, we'll make them a reasonable offer and kind of go from there. But you know, we either get them directly from the people that corresponded with these guys or girls, and or we, you know, find other collectors that have been collecting for, you know, a long time that have just are ready to part ways with their collection, you know?
Yeah, I was going to make a comment about the murderabilia boxes. I love the idea of it being a mystery, because no matter what, you're getting something that's one of a kind.
Sure.
And it's something that you're interested in. You're not buying from a website that covers several different things. It's true crime from you, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I started a binder with all the stuff that you've been sending me, just my own little binder to keep track of everything. But oh, it's one of a kind, and that's what is special to me. Steve's not going to have the same letter that I have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing too, just to kind of add on that I just thought of, you know, with your original question was, this hobby is very like, it's like a revolving door. I'll see people that, you know, we've sold to that are like selling something that we sold to them. Right. Like 6 months, a year later. Right. And it's like, you know, I'll ask them like, hey man, like, you know, like, why are you selling it? And it's just like, oh, something else came up, you know, that I, you know, want more, you know, like I'm selling this because you put this on your site and it's expensive, but I'm selling all this other shit so I can afford that, because I really want that. And that, I mean, I've done that in this hobby too, in my early days of collecting, where it's like, I had a bunch of this stuff, but then like something big, like a Gacy painting came up and I was like, fuck, like I got to sell some stuff to be able to buy this. Yeah. So I'll let go of some smaller stuff to buy something bigger. So it is very, the hobby is very like the pieces make their way around the murderabilia world for sure.
But that's when you also say, you know, we have payment plans, so you can keep that and then you could still buy from me.
Of course. Cause like, I never like to see people having to sell their shit. I don't like to see people having to like sell it just to afford something else. So like, you know, if I see something, I'm like, I just told you that. Why are you selling it? And they're like, oh, because of this. And I'm just like, we'll buy it back from you or credit you towards this piece that you want. And then you can just, you know, do a payment plan or whatever, you know? So we'll make it work.
Yeah. See, that sounds like a better idea to me, as opposed to just straight up selling it. And then you're like, oh, I didn't want to get rid of this, but I had to in order to get rid of that. It's like bittersweet, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, you're getting something you want, but at the same time, you're like, oh, fuck, I'm losing this that I also want.
Yeah. I've had pieces too, where it was like, I get a piece and it's like, I'm not like 100% attached to it. I'm kind of like, I'll lift it for this much. And if somebody wants to pay me this much for it, I'll let it go. If they don't, I'll leave it up for a month or two. And if it doesn't sell, I'll take it down and it's going to stay in the collection here. And then it sells. And I'm like, fuck. Damn it. Like I actually really wanted to keep that. And now I can't because somebody bought it. And I'm not going to be that guy that's just like, actually, I changed my mind. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And do that. Like, who would do that, right? That's horrible business.
It is horrible business.
I'm just like, well, I guess I got to sell it. Hopefully I find something similar in the future, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, so I got a weird one for you then. Corey kind of touched on this a little bit earlier with his wife. So this may be a weird one, but do you ever feel like some of these items come with some sort of bad energy with them? You know, almost like cursed items.
Personally, I don't. I have heard stories from other collectors. I'll tell you one of those stories here in a minute, because it's actually about an item that has been in our house for like years now. Mm-hmm. But I've never been like super, because they say like when it comes to paranormal stuff, like they say that like some people are more open to like seeing ghosts, hearing ghosts, experiencing, you know, spiritual energy and that type of thing. Some people are more open to those types of energies. I've never felt anything from any of these items personally. I can feel like a weird, like, holy fuck, like, you know, this painting was done by fucking the most, arguably the most infamous serial killer of all time, mm-hmm. right? Like the same hands that painted this fucking snuffed out 33 fucking kids. There's like that energy where it's just like that initial like wow factor, like, holy fuck, I can't believe I'm, you know, in the presence of this.
Yeah.
But as far as like it like haunting me and like feeling like energy from it, like changing how I act or, you know what I mean? Like anything like that, like we brought this painting into the house and, you know, our marriage failed or, you know, or something like that. The dog died, like something like that. Right. Personally, I have no experience with that. I've had quite a few people that have had those experiences that have like, you know, kind of told us about it. I'll give you the one. So we have three of these Pogo paintings right here, right? Yep. Three different variations. Stacy did like 300 or so of them while he was on death row. So there's a lot of them out there, right? So we have three of them. The one that is hanging out in our living room, I sold that painting years ago. It was like one of the first Gacy's that I ever sold, right? I had already had a Pogo of my own. I got that Pogo, like got it for a good deal. There was a guy that had bought some other stuff from us up in Canada that had told me like, hey, if you ever come across another Pogo, let me know. You know, I'm in the market. Cool. So I find one. I hit him up, said, hey, I got a Pogo. You want it? Sure. He takes it, right? Super cool guy. Tattoo artist up in Canada, just like real down to earth, not like out there or anything, right? And it was funny because I wanted that, like, it's like the nicest Pogo I've ever come across, right? So I immediately regretted selling it. Like as soon as I shipped it, I was like, fuck, I should have kept that one and sold my other one, right? But yeah. I wasn't thinking at the time. I'm like, hey, whatever. So like, I don't know, maybe 6 months down the road, he messages me back and he's like, hey man, you know, I never got my painting. And I'm like, what? And it wasn't a full six. It was probably more like three or four months. It was a substantial amount of time, even shipping from the US to Canada. It was a concerning amount of time. But yeah, I'm like, why are you just hitting me up now about this? You know what I mean? Like, why the fuck did you wait this long? And he's like, oh, you know, like I just didn't, you know, it showed in the tracking that it was still moving. It was just moving in places that didn't make any fucking sense. Right. So he finally gets the painting, right? It finally shows up at his house. Guess what day it showed up at his house?
Friday the 13th, something weird.
May 10th, the day Gacy was executed. So on the anniversary of his execution, the painting finally shows up after being going through the fucking world of, you know, the shipping world for months, right?
That's
finally
wild.
Shows up, messages me, hey man, I finally got it. And I'm like, I didn't even put it together. I wasn't even like, you know, paying attention to the date. I was just happy it fucking wasn't lost and that I wasn't going to have to file a claim with the post office and go through that whole process and refund this guy. You know, and then he brought it up. He was like, holy fuck, what's today? And I'm like, May 10th, it's my sister's birthday. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, that's also the fucking day that Casey was executed. Holy shit. So real weird right off jump, right? So it doesn't end there. So I get a message again from him like 6 months later. Like, hey man, how's it going? Well, yada, yada. And he's like, any chance you would want to buy this painting back? And I was like, sure. Why? You know? Like, are you good? Like, you know, you having trouble like financially, like, is there, you know, something wrong? Are you not happy, you know, with it? Like whatever it might be, you know, just wondering. And he said, this painting's ruining my fucking life is what he said.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm like, what do you mean, man? And he told me like this whole story. And like I said, like, I didn't know this guy personally, but he seemed like he didn't seem like the type that would just like make shit up, you know, or anything like that. But he was like, since I've had this painting, I lost 70% of my vision. My dog died. I think it was like his mom or his sister or something died. He was like fucking girl broke up with him. Like, think like his garage caught on fire. Like all this, dude, just like all this shit, right?
Wow.
And I was like, you're fucking with me, dude. Like, no way. And he was like, dude, I swear to like on my fucking life, like this painting is cursed. Ever since this has gotten here, my life has gone fucking downhill. All this fucking shit has been happening. please take it. please take it. You know what I mean? He's like, I'll sell it back to you for less than what I pay at that point. He was like, I just need it out of here. He was like, it has been sitting in a box in the garage since like 2 weeks after I got it. And I'm like, okay, I'll buy it back from you. Right.
Yeah.
It's been hanging in my house for 3-4 years now. And I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, so nothing's happened to me. So. Coincidences? Possibly. Maybe he experienced a different frequency of energy. And I don't know. I can't explain it. You know, for all I know, he could have just been making it up. I don't know. I don't think he was. I don't think at all that he was, but it was bizarre to say the least. So yeah. So technically I have a cursed pogo painting, but it's never cursed me that I know of anyway. So,
right.
Yeah.
We're going to have to edit that out because that's going to come back at you, I'm sure.
Why is that?
I don't know. I feel like you put that into the universe and then something bad's going to happen.
I've got it. Knock on wood.
I was going to tell you, this isn't the first time I've told this story, though. I've told this story, you know, a number of times because I do get asked that question quite a bit. Like, do you feel like there's bad energy or, you know, or are they haunted? Like people claim that there's like paintings that are haunted or items mm-hmm. that are haunted. And I'm just like, I've never had a bad experience with them, but other people claim that they have. So I don't know. Are they telling the truth? Maybe. Are they not? Maybe. Ain't no telling. Yeah.
Corey, you've got some questions.
Okay. So when and if you're ever done with this hobby one day, what do you hope people understand about why you did it?
Another question I've never been asked. Okay. Touche.
We asked the hard ones here.
No, I like it. I like it because I'm getting bored with getting asked like the same, you know, not that we've done a ton of these interviews, but it seems like we always get asked the same, you know, 5 questions. You guys are asking some really good questions here that are, you know, making me even think. Like it's hard for me to answer that because I don't ever see us being done with this hobby. Like this is something that I hope that like we continue to do for the rest of our lives because it's, you know, it's our passion. This is just what we do. Like this is what we love. We love doing this. We love, you know, connecting with our customers and our buyers and everything like that. As far as like how I want people, what was this second part of the question? How I want people to remember or understand?
Yeah. What do you hope people understand about why you did it?
We did it to preserve history, really, at the end of the day. I mean, you have to look at all these items from a historical standpoint and realize that, you know, there's a reason that there's, you know, a dozen museums around the world that are revolved around this stuff because it is a piece of history. It's an important piece of history. These objects, like, you know, like you and I, like we like owning them because we enjoy them. We enjoy the wow factor of them. We enjoy, you know, the fact that it's stuff that not a lot of people can say that they get their hands on. Right. But at the end of the day, it is history. It's a morbid history. And it's a lot of what we do is for historical and educational purposes. So I don't want people to, you know, remember us as like, you know, oh, they just did this to make money off of, you know, the crimes of all these people and off of the victims of all these people. We don't want to be remembered that way. We want to be remembered as the people that, you know, helped several museums get collections that they based a educational and historical teaching around. And put on display for all eyes of the world to see and to come so that they can understand that there is a darker part of humanity and that this stuff needs to be, you know, studied, looked into and remembered. So that was a really good question, man. I've never been asked that. So I hope that answer was okay. Cause that was one that I'm like, I'm kind of answering it as I'm still thinking about it. So I'm sure later I'm going to be like, fuck, you know, I should have added this in there. I should have said this too, but
yeah, feel free to add on to it if you think of something before we're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll punch it in. You'll have like a different t-shirt on and everything.
Yeah. You'll right.
Like, what the hell happened?
I'm calling you at like midnight. I've got like no shirt on and I'm just like, no,
no shirt on for you. Right. And then all of a sudden you have a shirt on. People be like, this podcast is fucking weird.
Yeah. This is weird. This is all over the place. These guys must've been like tripping on something when they did this.
He's just randomly flashing us.
We'll take it. We've both been looking forward to talking to you for, you know, since we started talking about doing this. So
yeah,
hell yeah, yeah. We've been really, really excited about this too because I knew this was going to be different than most of the ones that we've done in the past, And like I said, it's not like we've done a ton. Like, we don't have people reaching out to us left and right to do this type of stuff, but we have done a few here and there over the last few years. And so far, this is the most fun. So yeah, this has been awesome.
That's good.
I like to hear that.
Yeah, we try to have a good time on this podcast, and like with anyone we interview, like everyone that we interview has always been like, they go more than they need to. And we're just like, you know what? We're going to let you cook. Let you do your thing.
Yeah. Listen to the ramblings of this fucking insane person for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to have this is a first for us too, because this, you know, we've been doing this for 3 years now, and this is the first time, you know, we're talking to someone that's not on screen somewhere. You know what I mean?
Fix that, Corey. 4 years.
Well, that's cool.
4 years.
I mean, that's really cool. Like from my standpoint, knowing that this is like the first time that you've kind of branched into this world. And you know, kind of being there to be that person that you talk to about that. I got a question for you. So you guys have been doing this for, you said, for 4 years.
Yep.
So I'm just flipping around, cause I just want to get to know you guys too. But how did you figure out like, this is the, like you just sat down and you were like, we want to do a podcast. This is what we want to do it on. You know, was it just like you guys like talking all the time amongst yourself and you're like, man, we have good conversations. Like, we should fucking do something with this. Like, is that kind of how you guys got into this? Or
that is exactly it. I remember it kind of fondly too, because like we would talk about this shit, and you know, we all, like Corey and I, we collect a lot of the same shit. So like him and I, very like-minded. And we were out at Chinese food one night. It was like a birthday dinner, I think. And we were talking about, we should just start a podcast about this. And I was like, you know what? I have all the tools. They're just fucking sitting. I could do this. And I'm like, all right, well, let's make a test episode. So like we did our first episode, which was on, what was the Santa Claus movie?
Christmas Bloody Christmas.
Thank you. Yes, Christmas Bloody Christmas. So like every December is like our season.
Okay.
Like our next season type deal. So yeah, we were just sitting there. We're like, all right, let's try a podcast. And we do it, and we're like, okay, this is actually going pretty good. And then, you know, eventually we got to the point where like, you know what, we need to do video. And
yeah,
it just started getting a little bit better, a little bit better. And you know, now we have guests, and like we're trying to balance doing our movie reviews, which are always fun, but people love seeing the interviews as well. So we like to do kind of both realms.
Yeah. Yeah, I love what you guys do, because like, you know, I had, when you reached out, like I listened to like a few podcasts, right? Like I don't branch out a whole lot into podcasts. I usually only hear about podcasts when my sister's like, hey, check this true crime one out, right? And then I'll listen to it. But, you know, I never really branched out as far as podcasts go too much, right? But when you guys reached out, so I was like, you know, I started looking into you guys and I'm like, damn, like they've done some really fucking, you know, big interviews with, you know, with well-known names. And then like, I love the visuals you guys do, you know, like the, your reels and stuff that you do. And I'm just like, these guys are really fucking professional. And it stood out to me, you know, like how you guys, like, I really like the way that you guys do shit. And then when you send me like the thing today, you sent me like that little, what was it that you sent me? I think it was just,
oh, it was your YouTube.
It was your YouTube video. Right. So I hadn't seen anything on your YouTube yet. Right. I had just seen the reels on TikTok and Instagram, and then, you know, listened to a couple episodes of the podcast, and then I saw the YouTube. I'm like, God damn, these guys have it dialed in. So, you know, I really, really fucking hope to see you guys, you know, succeed beyond, you know, anything you could ever, you know, imagine that would come from just, you know, starting a podcast with your friend. I really hope, you know, like that this continues to grow for you guys, because what you're doing is fucking cool, man. I really respect that you guys put in the hard work, and that's you know, respectable. So
yeah,
appreciate that a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we do all right for what we have. You know, we have all these different software that we just make it work really well, and I think people are just pleasantly surprised when they see the final result, and they're like, okay, this is not what I was expecting. I mean, I remember Corey like the first time he was like, holy shit.
Well, that's just it. Like, it's just the two of us. Steve does all the editing by himself. He's a fucking wizard with all this shit.
Thank you.
Like, I'm more of the social media. I line up the interviews. Like, when it was you and I chatting that whole time. But Steve does all the editing by himself because he's got a background in that stuff. And it just works out, because you see a lot of podcasts doing this video stuff. And it to me, it just looks corny. And it looks like shit. Like,
exactly.
I feel like we look like a big budget podcast. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like not only that, but you guys make it like, I don't know, the like you guys obviously have a vibe, right? And like that's something like you see podcasters that have like multiple people and it's like, are you talking to like a stranger right now? Like this is supposed to be your co-host and like you guys are talking like you met for the first time today. Whereas you guys like you obviously have that vibe, you know, where you know you could tell like you guys know each other. And that I feel like is very cohesive and it helps you guys a lot with what you do because it makes it so natural. You know, you guys don't have to force shit. You know, a lot of these people are out here trying to force things to happen and you know, on their videos, podcasts, whatever they're doing. You guys don't have to do that. You're just like sitting down to have a conversation with my buddy. Conversation flows. And like the thing that like I can compare you guys, like you guys kind of remind me like less dark, you know, humor and like less, you know, yuck yucks, but like Last Podcast on the Left. Like I've been a big fan of that podcast for fucking years, right? Those dudes are great, but like they all know each other. Like they're all buddies, they're all friends. They just, you know, they can just spitball and it's all natural. They're just sitting there talking about like nothing. And you find yourself sitting there like listening, like you're a part of their conversation. So that's, you know, that's kind of what reminds me. You guys kind of remind me of that. So yeah, that's really cool. Anyway.
It helps because Steve and I have known each other for, you know, probably 2 decades at this point. So, you know, a lot of the conversations we have, it's all very organic. We know each other in person. He lives 20 minutes from me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We get asked all the time.
Yeah,
like, why
haven't virtually
we...
because we're lazy.
Yeah. we get asked a lot, you know, like, you know, do you have a podcast? Like, you know, are you going to do a podcast? And, you know, I've considered like delving into that realm with this before, like many times over the years. And especially after, cause like our TikTok channel, like somebody told me, you know, you should try TikTok. Right. And I was like, I don't want to fucking do TikTok. I made one TikTok video about some Jeffrey Dahmer stuff that I owned right after that Monster series came out. Woke up the next morning to like 3 million fucking views and like 20,000 new followers. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Shit.
So like, it was so weird and so random. And it's like, I tell my wife all the time, like I have to force myself to make TikToks. Cause I genuinely don't really like making the TikToks because like I said earlier in this interview, like it's probably going to take me like 10 fucking takes. That's because when I do TikTok videos, it's literally like me over and over. Oh God, I got to do that again. And it's just like, it ends up getting so time consuming because I know what I'm going to say, but then I go to say it and it's like, you know, word vomit. Like it just doesn't come out right. Right. Like this is not like I can have a conversation with somebody, but like forcing myself to take a video when I'm not talking to anybody except myself in the phone screen, it's different. But me and my buddy Adam were supposed to start a podcast, I don't know, like a year or two ago. And we had like the artwork for it. We had the name for it. It was going to be called Marketing Murder. And it was going to be all about, you know, just murderabilia, dealing murderabilia, what's out there, you know, that type of stuff. It's all going to revolve around that. And then it was just like he started his own. He has a company called Coffin Creeps and they make, you know, horror dolls and stuff. Okay. And like, he partnered up with one of the guys that plays in Marilyn Manson's band. And like, you know, he started getting really busy with that. And so like, before we could even get started, that happened. And then it was like, he was busy. We just had a newborn and it was like, just the timing was just not right. And then he ended up selling off like all of his collection and getting out of murderabilia. So it's like, he's talked to me since like, hey, you still want to do the podcast? And I'm like, you don't even collect anymore. What the fuck would the point be? You know what I mean? Like the whole point was because we were both collectors. We could talk about our collections and the stuff we want, the stuff we've had, the stuff we own and that type of thing. I'm like, you don't even own shit anymore, homie. Like, you know,
right.
But, you know, maybe in the future something will happen with that, but we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, that'd be pretty cool for like to do.
Just finding the time.
Yep.
Yeah, finding the time for it is tough too because it's, you know, we have, like I said, we have so many moving pieces with True Crime Collective. I work full time. I work Monday through Friday. The weekends, we're usually just trying to chill. You know, me, my wife, and our son, we're just trying to, you know, we go to Disney because we have annual passes, or, you know, we're out doing something to just, you know, that's not revolved around the brand or work and just decompress for a day or two that we have. So to like have to find another whole day to like dedicate to doing a podcast and recording and then editing and then all the shit that comes with it. I'm just like, I just don't think we have the time.
I wish I would have known all of this in October because I was just in, I went to Orlando for Halloween Horror Nights for my birthday.
Oh shit.
We could have met up.
We absolutely could have. Well, if you come down here, next year, we didn't go this year. We went like the last 2 years, but we didn't end up going this year. which I, you know, I wish we would have, because of the Terrifier house and everything. But we didn't end up going this year. But then we got annual passes to Disney, so we've been taking our son there and doing that. But yeah, if you're ever down here again, for sure, we'll link up with you. Absolutely,
we're planning
it's
on
only,
it next
we're only
year
like an hour from Orlando, so it's not far.
Yeah, we'll have to chat next year because Steve and I are trying to coordinate a trip because he didn't get to go this year.
Okay,
but next year we're gonna try and get down there, so we'll have to link up if we do.
Yeah, be sick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I would love that. You know, we want to respect your time, but like we have a few more questions. We'll go
as long as you want to go.
You're good to go. Okay,
I'm good.
All right. Our audience is going to be like, what the fuck? Why is this episode an hour and a half?
This guy doesn't shut the fuck up.
No, I mean, that's our whole bit. We do like 30 minutes. That's the podcast, 30 Screams or Less. That was the idea when we started it. We're like, we're sick and tired of these fucking two-hour podcasts. We want to be short and sweet.
Well, you can always do a two-parter.
This is all coming out at once. You're part of our four-year anniversary line of episodes.
All right. So it's going to be, what, like 120 Screams or Less? At this point.
Yes.
Infinite Screams or Less.
Yeah. No, we wanted to go big for our 4 year. So like you saw, we had Samantha from Terrifier last week and you're right after her. So
hell yeah. Yeah. That's a tough act to follow. That's a big name. I'm just a little fucking murderabilia dealer from Florida. She's in one of like the biggest horror franchises in the world right now. So
I know.
Yeah.
It's crazy that like the people that we get on this podcast that just want to do this. I mean, we're just like a couple schmucks who decided, you know what, we're going to have a podcast about horror movies and people want to be involved. And we're like, all right, this is fucking great. And now we're doing conventions and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I just have a couple more questions. I think you may have already touched up on it, but what are some of the biggest challenges you've experienced with starting True Crime Collective?
I mean, money. Money was, you know, one of the biggest things, especially like, you know, when I first started out, because it takes money to make money, right? You have to spend money to make money. You have to put in $500 in shirts to, you know, slowly make that back. And it's the same thing with Murderabilia. As I stated earlier, Murderabilia, you know, it's not cheap. Like we pay high prices to get it. Just like, you know, people pay high prices from us to get it from us. Like, you know, that's definitely a big factor. It's a very expensive business. So, you know, money is always, you know, a factor in it. Like with the Eileen stuff, we took a huge fucking risk buying that collection, man. We took a huge risk. Like that was offered to us by like a real old school collector, like very well-known, guy. And, he offered it to us and he was like, if you want it, cause we had done deals with him in the past for a few things, right? We bought like 8 Gacy paintings off of him like a year ago, did a couple real big deals with him. And then, you know, I knew he had all this Eileen stuff, but at the time he was like, not selling, whatever. Well, then he texted me one day just out of the blue and was just like, hey man, you know, probably going to sell quite a bit of stuff. I'm going to sell all my Eileen stuff. The only part of his Eileen collection he didn't sell is there was actually a few drawings that she did that he didn't sell. They were like pen drawings. They were pretty cool. But he was like, I'll sell it to you for this much. That's like literally like, don't even fucking come back with a full offer type thing. Like it's like, this is what it is. I'll give you 48 hours to, you know, to accept. Otherwise I have other people I'm going to reach out to. And I was like, God damn it. You know? So I talked to my wife about it. I said, hey, he's offering us all this stuff for this much. And she's like, God damn it. That's a lot of money. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's a huge risk. And, I just said, fuck it. I said, you know what? We have not, like, we've taken risks with this brand before where we were like buying out a collection or a lot of really expensive items. And it was like, it was a risk to get it because we were putting out a lot and we didn't know, like, we knew we would eventually make the, you know, make it back, but we were going to be out quite a bit of money for a while. You know, we thought like it could take 2 years for this shit to sell, for us to see our money back. You know what I mean? Mm. But once again, it takes money to make money. So we were like, it's an investment. You know, we'll see it back at some point. We'll do it. And then it ended up selling within a few days or a few weeks, you know, faster than we expected it to. So I'm like, we have taken big risks with this brand before. Fuck it. Like full send, whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we did it. And then a few days later, a museum reached out, wanted to buy the fucking bulk of it. And it was like, holy fuck. You know, like that couldn't have gone any better. It's, you know, like that was like best case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very tough. One of the things, and like this is going to sound kind of stupid, but one of the things that we've struggled with a lot since I started this 7-8 years ago is fucking social media. We're the account that we're on now is our 11th account.
Oh my God.
In 7-8 years, that's our 11th Instagram account alone. We basically lose our Instagram account like once a year, like once every couple of years. Like our last, not the account we have now, but our last account was the longest standing account that we had had without it getting taken down by Instagram. And I want to say it was like almost 2 years. And we had a pretty big, I think we were at like 4,000 followers, right? Because we don't do, like we try to stay kind of low key on Instagram because of that. Like we don't do like the sponsored ads or, you know, anything like that. That's going to like draw a bunch of people that are, you know, going to just mass report us and spam report us and shit and get our shit taken down. Right. So we don't do like a whole lot when it comes to, you know, marketing on there, as far as like we have our followers and, you know, that's cool. Right. But, yeah, so it's like, that's been a big thing. Cause every time that would happen, like every time our account would get swiped, sales would go down because, you know, we post what we sell on Instagram. It's a huge marketing tool. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a lot of people rely on it as a marketing tool, unfortunately, us included. And every time that we've, you know, had an account swiped from us, yeah, the sales plummeted. It definitely hurts us. And luckily our site has gotten to a point where like we have an email marketing thing in the site where you can, you know, sign up to receive, you know, newsletters. And I try to stay on top of like sending newsletters out whenever we get like a few new items and like, hey, got these in, and, you know, hey, dropping this shirt, whatever. And we've got like, you know, a few thousand subscribers on there, and that has helped a lot. Whereas like, if our Instagram account gets deleted tomorrow, I'm like, we're good. You know what I mean? Like, we can market through that for the time being until we regrow Instagram again for the 15th time. But yeah, that's definitely been a hurdle. That it's very frustrating too, because we put a lot of work into it, right? We put work into making the reels and making the videos, making the posts and interacting with people. And then like we wake up and it's just like, your account has been suspended for violating the guidelines. And it's like, for fucking what? For a cartoon on a fucking t-shirt, bro? Like, yeah, are you kidding me? Like, that's usually what it is. Like, it's usually something like that. And we found like, even this account that we have now has been reported. Like, we've had a few posts taken down. Right now, I'm going to tell you guys, if you post any of this, don't post anything with the name Ted Bundy in it. Because fair anytime enough. We post anything with the name Ted Bundy in the caption, in the fucking picture, even if it was like, we have the Tales of Ted Bundy shirt, immediately, it's gone immediately. Like, Instagram has that name red flagged, and as soon as you post about it, it is fucking gone. So yeah, so we can't post anything. Like, we found a way around it. Like, we can't even post the picture of the Tales of Bundy shirt that we have, right? Because that, even if we don't put anything in the caption, it'll get taken down. But when we have like a Ted Bundy letter or something that we're selling, we found a way around it by putting his full name, Theodore Robert Bundy. And then it doesn't get taken down, right? And same with Manson, because Manson's one that, not all the time, but a lot of time, Manson's name gets flagged too. So we just put Charlie Manson, and it confuses the algorithm, apparently.
All right. So good to know.
Yeah.
Freaking algorithms.
It sucks. Social media sucks.
Just go with like Ben Tundy or something like that.
Ben Tundy.
Ben Tundy. There you go.
Latin.
Yeah.
Hills of Ben Latin. Tundy. People are going to go, what the fuck?
Yeah. Ed Bay, Tundy, yeah. A.
Yeah. But I mean, but mind you, like, you know, it's like, we've only been doing Murderabilia for like the, on the level that we do it at now, we've only been doing it for about 3 years. We've been doing a little bit of it for more than that, but like on the level of where like Murderabilia is now the focus of True Crime Collective, whereas it used to be the shirts and merchandise was, with a little Murderabilia sprinkled in the background. Now it's the opposite, right? But even back then, it's like I had my original designs, they were all Tattoo Flash, right? Tattoo Flash of Dahmer, Gacy, Manson, Bundy. Cartoons. Mm-hmm. Literally fucking cartoons. And they would get taken down for terrorism and violence was the reason that Instagram would take them down. And I'm like, it's a drawing. I'm not posting a video, like a photo of a fucking crime scene. I'm not posting photos of dead bodies. But yet I see accounts out here that post videos of like dog fighting rings and shit, and you report their posts and Instagram comes back and they're like, no violation. Nope, I don't see anything wrong here.
Yeah, I know where Steve's going sense. Now.
Yeah, you know exactly where I'm going because we just talked to Samantha about this, about the lunacy that Corey sends me all the time of people just getting killed left and right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but I mean,
all over
you
the
put
internet,
down
right?
Bed Tundy, and all of a sudden it's a problem.
Exactly. Yep. It's crazy. It's fucking wild, man. But what are you going to do?
Nothing you can do. The email marketing, I've always been kind of a believer in that. I might be biased because I work at an email marketing company. So, the good thing about it is like you maintain that data. Like those are your subscribers. They'll go with you wherever you go, permitting they don't unsubscribe. I mean, if social media in general shits the bed, everything's gone.
Right.
You have to rely on what you have already for your audience. So it's important to do that. And I think
it's also like finding the sweet spot because I don't want to like blast so many emails that these people are like, God damn it, this fucking guy again, and unsubscribe, right? So I try to keep it relevant, you know, and not, you know, I'll send out like a few a week and that's usually, you know, enough. You know, there's some that I subscribe to that I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is like the 12th fucking email from you guys about the same shit today, you know? Yep. And it's like, I love this brand, but God damn, I'm sick of getting their emails. So I try not to go too overboard
at least
with it.
Once a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually just started the newsletter for us. It's really just to let people know, like,
unsubscribe,
hey,
unsubscribe.
Yeah, unsubscribe. Everyone's unsubscribing right now. We have 13 subscribers. They're all unsubscribing at this very time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and basically, like, an email on Monday letting people know there's a new episode out and maybe, like, a merch drop deal.
Yeah.
But that's about it. I'm not going to go crazy, like, bombarding their inboxes. It's more of just, like, letting them know stuff.
Yeah.
Keeping them informed. And I hope people don't unsubscribe. I hope we get a bunch of subscribers. And then that's great.
I hope they all unsubscribe.
Great. I can't wait. So, Corey, you still have some questions, don't you?
Yeah. So what's the most unsettling item you've ever handled or had in your possession?
Probably Gary Heidnik's torture tools. I don't know if you are familiar with Gary Heidnik.
Not the name, no, but you said torture tools, so now I want to hear more.
Yeah. So Gary Heidnik, he was a Philadelphia serial killer. And to give you a little bit of just like basic insight without going too far into the story, Gary Heidnik's crimes is what Buffalo Bill was based on.
Okay.
Gary Heidnik had a hole in his basement that he was kidnapping prostitutes and fucking keeping them in a hole in his basement. And believe a couple of them, one or two of them that he murdered, he ended up feeding them to one of the other girls that was still in the hole. So his crimes didn't go on very long. He didn't actually kill too many people. I think he only killed 3 or 4 people, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not super well versed on his case, but when we did a huge deal with a museum over in Europe over the summer. And one of the items that was part of that deal, we had consigned a bunch of items for a really old, well-known collector. And he got into contact with us earlier that year and was basically like, hey, I found you guys. I love what you're doing. I love your fucking TikToks. You know, I love the brand. I'm looking to get rid of a lot of my shit. I don't have the connections, you know, anymore to sell it. You know, do you want to consign it? You can make some money. I'll make some money, you know, whatever. And he just has fucking amazing items, man. Like some of these museums in the United States, like their museums are like all his shit. Like they're like all the stuff in their museums belong to him. He rents them to them. Right. Great guy too. Fucking awesome dude. Like we've built a friendship through it, but we did this huge deal with this serial killer exhibit over in Europe. That's actually going to be coming stateside here soon. But one of those items was Gary Heidnik's torture tools. And the torture tools were found after he was caught. He drove a Rolls Royce. His Rolls Royce was, you know, recovered, taken into evidence, whatever. And when they, you know, were done with it, they ended up like tearing up the back and they found these bloody screwdrivers in there. And he later went on to admit that like, yeah, I was using those screwdrivers to fucking torture these people. So that was probably, I would say, the most unsettling, I guess, just because it's like, I didn't handle them. Like, if I'm being honest, like when he sent them in an envelope And like, I obviously didn't want to touch them. So like I had gloves on, but like, I kind of like opened the envelope up and I like dumped them out onto the table and took a couple pictures of them that I needed to take. And then I kind of just like scooped them back in. I didn't really handle them, but yeah, just knowing like what was done, you know, or potentially done with those screwdrivers was pretty intense. But yeah, other than that, man, I'm trying to think. It's just like, we've just had so much stuff come in and out of our hands that it's kind of hard to remember everything on the spot. But yeah, I would say that and Dahmer's glasses.
That's gotta be cool. But also wearing those during the murders, clearly, so he can fucking see. So you recently had the big Eileen Wuornos drop that people went absolutely ballistic for. Got anything big coming in the pipeline that may make horror and true crime fans lose their minds again?
Honestly, at the moment, nothing too crazy coming down the pipeline. You know, we have a lot of stuff that's still coming in and that we're still procuring, but nothing like to that magnitude. That was one of those deals where that doesn't happen every day and it doesn't happen often. We were lucky enough to be the ones that were offered it first, and we jumped on it when we did, and I'm glad that we did. But yeah, those big items like that, they don't come up as much as I wish they would, but there will be more. There always is. You know, like I said, like I was just talking about that whole deal we did with that exhibit over in Europe. They got Gacy's typewriter, they got Gacy's TV, they got Albert Fish's confession letter. That was a huge thing, but like there was no press around that whatsoever, right? Like there was like, that was one of those things where it's like, we got the items. And at the same time we were getting all those, we were talking to this museum that had reached out to us like, hey, you know, we're looking to get some really cool items for our next stop in Berlin, Germany for this traveling tour and our traveling exhibit rather. And it was like, the timing was right, but it was like, we didn't even have a chance to like do any sort of like, I guess, PR as you could call it with that. Like, it was like I did a couple TikToks about it and that was pretty much it. Like, it was like, we got it and then we were packing it in a tote and flying it over to Italy ourselves. Like that, yeah. It was a very quick turnaround with that stuff. We didn't get, you know, a whole lot of time to market or talk about it. You know, really, it was a very quick deal. But that deal, in my opinion, was way bigger than the Eileen Wuornos stuff. It just didn't make it to TMZ or the New York Post. So
right.
Not a lot of people heard about it unless you followed our TikTok or our Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
so you flew Gacy's typewriter to Italy?
Yeah. So when that whole deal happened, right, they bought a lot of stuff from us, man. They got Gacy's typewriter, his TV, his prison TV and typewriter. They got the Heidnik torture tools. They got the Albert Fish confession letter, 17-page long Albert Fish confession letter. They got some Ted Bundy court documents. I think it was the Ted Bundy's guilty verdict court document. Bunch of other stuff too. Ted Kaczynski stuff, like a couple Ted Kaczynski letters, the Unabomber. And just some, you know, random letters and documents and that type of thing. I can't really remember all of it offhand, but it was a lot. And it was like, if it was just the document, you know, and maybe like the Gary Heidnik, you know, tools and stuff, we could have shipped that over. But we've got this giant, you know, old Emerson TV, you know, little, not giant TV, but it's, you know, it's like this thick, right?
Yeah.
And the typewriter that was, you know, about the same size. And we told them, like, we were like, this is going to cost you a lot of fucking money to ship. And it's also going to cost you a fuckload in customs fees. So I've kind of floated the idea, like, it might be easier and cheaper for us to just fly this over. Yep. So I kind of like finagled that into the deal that, you know, as part of the deal, they were going to fly me and Marin over there and, you know, pay for our flight, pay for our hotel stay. And, you know, we would box it all up and get it over to him and hand it off to him in person. And it was something, man. It was like, it was literally probably the most like stressful 24 hours of my life, because we put it all in this big tote, right? And we padded it as well as you could, right? Yeah. But the airlines, because we had to check it, obviously we couldn't bring that on the airplane. It was huge. It weighed like 70-80 pounds, and it was massive. It was like 4 feet long. It cost us $500 to check it. And yeah.
Damn.
And so like I put an air tag in it and it was like, dude, I'm literally just like, you could ask Marin. I'm literally just like refreshing this fucking thing to see where it's at. Like the whole time, is it on the plane with us? You know, who knows? Yeah. Like these guys could have just been, you know, yeeting it into the fucking air and it hits the ground. And then we get there and everything's fucking in pieces. Right. So yeah. I'm like, if we get there and this shit's all broke, like we're fucked. Right. Yeah. Like we're fucked. Like, cause we're going to have to give them their money back and then we're out thousands of dollars. Right. So it was stressful, man, but it was cool because we got, we flew it over there. We met with them. We handed it off, gave them all the documentation, you know, they checked everything. And then we explored Italy for 5 days. That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. Yeah. It was a hell of an experience for sure.
That's awesome. Corey, yeah, go for it. You got one more question. So do I. Mine is an Ender question for sure.
Yeah. So we kind of touched on this before, but if you could talk a bit more about it, is there one serial killer that you're consistently drawn back to when it comes to reading and collecting, and what keeps pulling you there?
Gacy.
Definitely Gacy. We touched on this a little bit earlier. Yeah, definitely Gacy. Gacy's always been the one, ever since like I've been into true crime, is, you know, once I found out about John Wayne Gacy's case, he's the case that I've like studied the most. I've read the most material about, I've owned the most material, on, and his art, there's something about his art, man. I don't know how to explain it, but there's just something so like creepy and evil and dark that just like draws me to his artwork, like to the point that, you know, we were talking about like the energy thing earlier, but like I'll literally find myself out in, you know, our living room or wherever the paintings are. And I'm just like standing there, just kind of staring at them, you know, just like taking it in and just taking in the, you know, what that is, what exactly that object is. Right. So yeah, his case I've always found to be the most fascinating too. And I think that's part of what drives me to John Wayne Gacy's items, as far as being a collector and wanting those pieces. And another one too, as far as like case goes, because there's not a whole lot of murderabilia out there on. We recently actually just acquired a few pieces of his that was the first in all of my years of collecting. And that's Richard Kuklinski, the Iceman, serial killer / hitman. That case is probably, honestly, has probably been more interesting to me than Gacy's. But as far as collecting, like Richard Kuklinski didn't really write too many people while he was in prison. He didn't do any artwork or anything like that. So items of his out there on the market are super sparse. Like I said, I just acquired 3 items of his, one of which I put up on the site for sale, and I'm keeping the other 2. But yeah, those 2 cases for sure trump like any other case for me.
Nice. I just got to get your opinion on this. What did you watch the new Devil in Disguise series?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think of it?
Fucking loved it.
Yeah, I loved it as well.
And you don't hear me saying that I love many of those theories very often. The you know, not the documentaries. Like the documentaries are usually, you know, pretty solid. They're starting to get a little repetitive now, but the documentaries are usually pretty good, right? They at least stick to the real story. But like, you know, when Devil in Disguise came out, it was right after the Ed Gein Monster series came out, and that was such a colossal piece of shit.
Fuck that show.
I was like, my expectations for the Gacy show were so low, but given that it was Gacy, I'm like, babe, we're watching it. Like, I don't fucking care. You know, we're going to at least start it and see how it is. And we watched it. We fucking loved it, dude. It was so good. Like they, you know, of course, like there's always some things that are sprinkled into those series that aren't exactly true or didn't exactly happen that way. Right. But as far as that show goes, I don't think I've seen another like real, like a reenactment adaptation of a true crime serial killer story that's ever stuck that close to the facts of the actual story. And like, even so much, like there were like small details that they had put in there that I was like, holy shit. Like, I can't even think of it like off the top of my head, but I remember there being like a few times where I looked over at Marin and I was like, oh my God, like, I can't believe like they like included something down to like that small of a detail. Right. And then like, even just like they showed him painting in prison. Right. And like, they used a real image of one of his paintings in that scene, right? Instead of just like putting some dumb little fucking, you know, cartoon clown on there, they actually used a real image of his skull clown painting, which I thought that was really fucking cool too. So, yeah, to answer your question, that series was awesome.
I love the show, but like you said, the little details, like one of my favorite details that they caught in the show was when he was going to the courthouse with the prosecutor and they asked him how many people he killed.
Yeah.
And I think, what did he say? Like 44? And then he goes, that sounds like a good number.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, he actually 40, said 45, that sounds like a good number. And that was something that was reported that he said.
Yeah. And then like the last meal, which I wish they included this, his last meal of KFC with the shrimp and the, you know, the fried chicken, and then his final words. I wish they put that in the show, the kiss my ass. I fucking love that.
That's actually false. Those weren't his last words.
Is it?
Yeah. Yep. He at some point, like during that whole thing, had said like kiss my ass, but like his last words when he was on the thing about to get the lethal injection, that his last words were not kiss my ass. So that's actually a miss.
Okay.
So yeah.
It was JK, just a little LOL Rafflecopter. Kiss my ass, JK.
JK, hello.
No, I read a long book and about it. Actually, right after that, Ed Gein show came out because I wanted to learn more about gays, like more about all this stuff. And I forget what book I read. It was on my Kindle, and that's what they said his last words were.
So you should read. Karen Conti's book. I can't even remember the name of it. It's out on my bookshelf, but it just came out, I believe, last year, within the last couple years, and. Karen Conti, if you don't know who that is, she was Gacy's, what is it, like death sentence attorney. I can't remember like the exact verbiage of it, but like she was the one that was handling his appeals, basically, like towards the end, like when they were trying to set a date and be like, all right, we're fucking taking this guy out. Like it's time. He's been on death row for, you know, 14 years now. She was the one that was helping him with his appeals and trying to get them to reverse it or at least get a stay of execution to buy them some more time, right? So she wrote a book about her whole experience with Gacy, and she actually was there. Like, she didn't see him be executed, but she went and saw him at the prison, like, shortly before he was taken back and visited with him, right? But she knew, you know, the people that were there. But she wrote in her book, like, basically wrote in the book about that whole kiss my ass thing and how that wasn't true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have to check that out.
It's a fantastic book, and it's not super long either. It's a really good read. So I would definitely recommend that. I'll actually send you the name of it once we get off of here, because I can't for the life of me remember it.
Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy?
Yep, Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy. Yep,
that's it.
All right, my last question, because after all, this is a horror movie podcast for the most part. What's your favorite horror movie of all time?
Favorite horror movie of all time? I've got a few, and there's a reason behind it. So I'm going to say one of my top is Scream, the first Scream. And you're going to be like, oh, no. The reason being is that was the first horror movie that, because like my dad got me into horror movies when I was like super young, like before I should have even been watching horror movies, right? Because like I was into horror long before I was into true crime, right? But my dad and I would watch, you know, Tales from the Crypt and like the Nightmare on Elm Street, the Halloweens and shit when I was young. But the first movie that I like really remember that resonated with me when I was a kid was the first Scream, right? Because I'm not that old. I was born in 91. I'm only 34 years old. So I think the first Scream came out in what, 93? So when I first watched that Scream movie, I think I was like 6 or 7. That was like the first movie that really stuck out to me that I had seen. So that's always been on my top list in like a nostalgic way. That and because it's fucking phenomenal, right? Another one of my favorites that's lesser known is The Hills Run Red. I love that fucking movie, if you've ever seen that.
I haven't heard of that one.
No. Yeah, I know.
You kidding me?
What? No. Shit, we're fakes.
Hell, yeah, we're phonies.
Delete all this. I'm out. No, you guys got to watch that movie. That movie's great.
I'm looking at 2009.
Yeah, The Hills Run Red. Great fucking movie. Definitely low budget. But not like super low budget at the same time. Trick or Treat has always, I always love Trick or Treat. Literally wearing my Trick or Treat shorts right now. My Trick or Treat gym shorts right now. I'd say those are probably like my top three. I'm sure that there's going to be something I think of after this. But then Tales from the Crypt and like the OG Tales from the Crypt and Creepshow. I grew up on that shit, man. Me and my dad used to just watch Sci-Fi Channel all fucking day on the weekends. And I just remember watching Tales from the Crypt with him. And then I ended up, when they released the box set of it, I bought the whole box set of them and have rewatched them so many fucking times. It was funny because like when you were mentioned earlier about like the Christmas horror movie, I forget the name of it, but I was thinking that I think it's the first episode of season one of Tales from the Crypt. Like their first episode has the Santa that escapes the insane asylum.
Oh yeah.
Know the one I'm talking about? Yeah, that's like one of my favorite fucking shorts. So
we actually met John Cassier this year. He was at Silver Scream.
Oh, word. That's
and the kid that plays Sam from Trick or Treat was there as well.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So all right. Yeah, we've been at it for quite a while. We appreciate you sticking with us for all this time. This has been such an awesome interview. You know, we thank you for sticking with us for almost 2 hours. Honestly, probably the longest interview we've ever had so far to date. So there you go.
I won.
Make your mark on this podcast.
Thank you guys so much for having me. No, this was awesome. Like I said, I was really looking forward to doing this one, and it went about exactly how I imagined it was going to go. So I'm super stoked to have been able to talk to you guys, and, you know, thank you for reaching out and wanting me to be on this show in the first place. It's fucking cool as shit. And if you ever want to have me back, fucking say less, man, just let me know.
So, oh yeah.
I'm sure we could talk for another 3 hours.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to be the third co-host of this show moving forward?
It's an idea. I'm not opposed to it.
We've been trying to get Skeet Ulrich, but he's not available.
I got his number. I'll call him and talk him into it, you know.
All right. But Jordan, it's been awesome having you on this episode again. Thank you so much for sticking it out with us. I always like to offer this. If like we're in the area, or if you're up in Massachusetts, I don't know if you drink or not, but we'd be more than willing to buy you a round at a bar or something. So if you drink, if not, we'll do the same thing with Samantha, where we just get you water and then Corey and I will drink.
Works for us too, though. If we're ever out of your direction, we gotta arrange to hang out, and we'll buy you a water there, whatever you drink.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I've been straight edge for 22 years, so I think I'm gonna keep that going.
We'll get you a nice sparkling water.
Okay, fair enough. Water with a little fucking razzle dazz to it.
Yeah, a little sounds good. Like, gotta put a little lemon in there. Sparkling
grape juice, maybe.
Grape juice. Oh, okay. Now we're getting fancy. I don't know. I don't know if it's in the budget.
Pinkies up, boys. Come on, we can do this.
Yeah, we can make it happen. So. All right, yeah. Thanks again. This has been awesome. Everyone, be sure to check out truecrimecollective.com. Get some awesome serial killer culty shit stuff up there. Even just check it out. It's fucking awesome. Also, sign up for his newsletter so you get to hear about all these drops that True Crime Collective is happening, because I'm going to be a future buyer. I don't have the money at the moment. So here's an idea. Buy some merch. I'll take that money, and I'll buy a murderabilia box. There we go. Thanks again.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Thanks, Jordan.
Hell yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. This has been great.
No problem. Thank you. All right, everyone. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review on all podcast platforms so we can get some more exposure. Of course, tell your friends. Both our intro and outro music are courtesy of Andrew Scott Bell. Be sure to check out Andrew on all major streaming platforms. And if you see Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey on vinyl in the wild, be sure to pick it up. We're also part of the Shining Wizards Network. Be sure to visit shiningwizardsnetwork.com. They're an awesome podcast network ranging from wrestling to heavy metal, horror, all that good stuff. So check that out. Visit 30screamsorless.com for all previous episodes and transcripts to go with those episodes. Also, check out beardoctane.com for their whole line of grooming supplies, and be sure to use the code 30screams10 at checkout for 10% off your order. And if there's anything you want us to review, send an email to 30screamsorless@gmail.com or hit us up on social media. Use hashtag 30screamsorless. And also, we have some awesome merch for sale on our website, so definitely check that out. If you go to our website, at the very top, there's a shop link. Click that link, and you'll see all sorts of shirts, hats, mugs, things like that. If you buy it, it helps going towards our hosting costs. I'm Steve.
I'm Corey.
And thanks for listening to 30 Screams or Less. And don't forget to drink your beans.